Hello, we are live. This is the time of the webcast where we're checking to make sure that's going out in all the appropriate places. My name is Gabe Ripley. I'm here with Fawn, and we are your hosts for the Tattoo Weekly, a show that live streams right now every Tuesday at 11 a.m. through the Reinventing the Tattoo Network. Sometimes we have to fight the computers, so I'm outside doing this from memory. Would like to thank, you know, Guy Aitchison and all of the sponsors. That includes World Tattoo Events and the Apprenticeship Diaries podcast. Uh-oh, I know I'm going to forget people. I already am. But let us know how this is working for you in any of the chat rooms. I see the numbers are going up a little bit. We should have guest Whitney Schiller beaming in for an interview. And then one of the topics that we will talk about are tattoo clients going under anesthetics and what that kind of means and some of the different takes on it. But I'm also on the fly, not screen sharing or doing anything. I'm on my iPad at the moment. Like I said, if this is working for you, let us know in the chat rooms. And what else is in the intro? I know I forgot a million things. We beam out nearly every day. I guess it's like 4 days a week. We've got tattooing for drawing for tattooers with James Wisdom at 9 a.m. every Monday, Eastern Standard. 12 noon Eastern on Mondays is drawing. What's Jason Leeser? Skill Building Mondays with Jason Leeser. And let's see, Tuesdays at 11. Hey, that's this show. We have the Tattoo Weekly, and like I said, today we have Whitney Schiller, and then next week, Marvin Moskowitz, the part of the old school family of tattooers from the Bowery in New York, will be beaming in. And so, there we go. How are you doing, Fawn? I'm going to lean on you heavily for this show.
I'm doing pretty good. I was actually pulling up some references for some things I wanted to talk about later on in the show. To kind of like expand on what I talked about a little bit last week. But if awesome. You were this... able to screen share, it would be way easier for me, but I'll figure it out.
You know, I was all prepared to, my computer is on the fridge. I think yesterday I was ready to go out and you know, get the Best Buy financing. Today I have a video, I'm gonna show you the video of what my computer was doing. I think I could piece it together. I just push these computers, you know, to their max. And the computer I got a couple of years ago, you know, I mean, I assume it's like that with all the equipment, right? The tattoo machines always have engines, you know, even the rotaries have engines that, you know, you always hear people complaining about in the forums and whatnot. But sorry about the computer problems. I, you know what? This is one of my pet peeves, too, going throughout the network. Whenever anybody's like, you know, talking about their computer's not working, I'm like, just shut up. No one will know.
Yeah.
You got a beautiful background.
I mean, so one of the things that we've always talked about is the technology demons, like as skilled and as versed as we get doing these live events, it's like the technology demons are as much of a character in our shows as we are. So we just kind of got to roll with them.
Absolutely.
But yeah, when I was shopping around for this machine that I broadcast off of, I was trying to get like the most powerful, but also compact. So finding an i7 that I could easily fit in my backpack that didn't take up much more space than an iPad was a little tricky and not the cheapest, but I also felt like jumping up to an i9 was going to be a lot because I'm not a gamer or anything crazy.
i9,
like that.
Is this are these Macs or these PCs?
Intel. HP, HP is what I have. But yeah, the processing speed, I never had to consider that so much when I was... Or when I was shopping for this machine, because usually like when I have a computer, I use it for like the bare minimums of Photoshop, the bare minimum of Clip Studio, and then like surfing the web and like my Chase transactions and things like that. I use it for almost nothing of what it's capable of. But because we're always pushing with this, it's always nice. And like when you and I show up somewhere together, I feel confident that my equipment can always make a awesome instant backup for yours too. So it's
my computer right now, I think again, before I come out to Red Tree for sure, I've had a couple people ask if we're going to be beaming out the Tattoopreneur conference, And the answer to that is, as soon as anybody's like, yes, I'll drop down the money, then I'll commit to bringing out the equipment, setting it all up. Although I probably will anyways, because I can't help myself no matter what. But
it's so nice to just have it. Yeah, when
little Mac Minis, and there's like the M2, there's like the M2 something, and then the M2 Ultra, and you know, one's 2,000, one's 4,000. I hate buying computers. And again, I guess I can't imagine it being any different. Like, just looking at all the specs and looking at all the numbers, and I've been looking at numbers for 30 years. I have no fucking clue what.
It's so crazy. It's the same when we're talking like tattoo equipment and stuff. You've got all of these technical numbers and all of these like features and things, but like, you got to think about like what kind of work you do. What are you actually going to be using it for? And then start shopping from there. I think a lot of people get carried away with like the gimmicks and the shiny and the new and the, rather than like looking at what they specifically need and then finding the machine to fit their needs. I think a lot of people kind of tend to shop the other way around. And I think it's similar with electronics too. People go like hog wild getting the newest and latest, and then it's still not compatible with whatever equipment they already have.
Yeah, one of the drawbacks to going at it yourself without necessarily having a mentor who's like, well, for this style of tattooing that you're interested in, you know, I've seen these things be a success, as you know, more like, you know, trial and error. So I mean, I guess it's a faster track to trial and error, but picking equipment and whatnot. I mean, I guess it could take years to figure out and finally settle on what the right combo is.
Yep. And then as you're figuring it out, your style changes and evolves, and then your needs change. So just as soon as you've got it figured out, there's something else that needs to be adjusted or changed. Or so it's like an endless cycle. But at the same time, I'm always one of those people that's like, don't fall for every gimmick. Don't, like, the new thing might not be any better or any different than the old thing. Like, look at it, figure it out. Is it even something you need? Is it a trend? Is it a counterproductive trend? Because there are a lot of those in the industry right now, which is
funny. We decided that we'll start diving into them. We're not going to do the ink changing with the UV light one this time, though. We're going to be talking about going under anesthetic, the clients who are going under anesthetic and having five people go after their back at once and whatnot. But we'll talk. I don't know when we're talking about that.
I can jump down that rabbit hole. I've got some, I think we've touched on this before, and I've got some incredibly strong opinions on it, but.
Awesome. I want to make sure that Whitney could hop on, because quarter after was when she was. So I'll be back in 2 seconds.
Okay. Let's see here. While he's doing that, I'm going to try and pull up this other video I was talking about for later. I was talking on one of our breaks yesterday here at the shop with our warehouse manager, and we were just talking about like some of the in-depth like physics of tattooing. And I pulled up some of the conversation with Aaron Williams and Jake Meeks on Fireside. And I was showing her those, the microscopic video that Aaron made, where you can actually see each tiny like hole and reservoir made by the needle. And then you can actually watch how the ink is drawn into it. I was trying to find that specific clip to share with everybody, because I think it, for me, even as a seasoned tattooer, I feel like that kind of changed my understanding of how saturation works and helped me become a little bit more efficient.
You know, seeing, you know, Gabe, can you email me the Zoom link? My phone has, here we go. I got her. Okay. Reply. Paste. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but
let
me.
Oh, no. Over to you. Honestly, Gabe, I was trying to just fill the air with a little bit of useful jibber jabber while you were working it out.
Awesome. Do you have any upcoming travel?
Well, we're gearing up for Hell City. So until Hell City, I'm here. I'm pretty much in Columbus, helping in all the ways that I can. Did I lose you, Gabe? Well, I'm going to keep trying to pull up this moment that I wanted to share with you guys today, because it kind of expands on what I was talking about last week. With the different depths that needles move at. Oh man, I can't find this conversation. Here we go. I just found it. So I'll have this queued up and ready to go for us when the time is ready. Are you back?
Okay.
There we go.
Yeah. So, yeah, why don't we give that a go now until Whitney, I just got her the link. And
awesome. I just found, I don't know if you could hear me for sure, but I just found what I was looking for. So let me make this full screen, get us a screen share going. Sorry, I swear one of these days I'll get faster at doing these.
No worries. If you're interested in being the production intern, Reinventing the Tattoo is looking for an intern that can turn into a part-time job. Where's Kyle? He's tattooing, right?
Yeah, he seems like I haven't talked to Kyle in several weeks now, but he seems like he's doing really good. I'm definitely following his progress on Instagram. If you guys want to see the stuff that he's been working on, his Instagram is Skies Afire, like a blaze, you know, a fire, Skies Afire.
Yeah, it's fun that it was amazing to watch his progression from, you know, starting to draw to, you know, getting better to moving across country and going through, you know, the whole reinventing program. And guys mm-hmm. did, like, you know, weekly critiques with him for, I don't know, it might have been 6 months up to a year. And so we have video somewhere of Guy doing a weekly critique with, you know, with Kyle, with his assignments and whatnot. So, yeah, we got to find that. That's somewhere.
I'm just going to share my whole screen and then bounce over here. Is that working? You got my screen share going?
Oh, let me, yep. I think I need to click up here.
Oh, there we go. There's our endless. Here we go. Here's what I wanted to share with you guys. So last week we were talking about the different stroke lengths and what the different cams of the machines, like how they affected the way the machine actually pushes ink into the skin. And one of the things that I mentioned was the suction that is created in the holes left behind by the needle. Like the needle is going to deposit some ink with each stroke, but then as you continue working that, or as you continue moving, the subsequent strokes after that, those holes through suction draw more ink down into each hole. And Aaron Williams, he is a fantastic nerd, but he is he makes the TACCOM power supplies, and they're incredibly intelligent power supplies, and he can go all the way down the rabbit hole about what makes them so special. But when you see this slow motion and like macro, you can see the actual like physics of how the ink is traveling into and like along with the needle as it moves. I wonder if I could get the sound on this.
Yeah, his interviews are great. To your point, the level of detail that he could nerd out on. I'm a pretty geeky guy. And I could follow, you know, a lot of science and, you know, a lot of computery stuff. But when you get down into, like, the circuitry, you know. And The power and the, you know, it gets, you know, pretty awesome. And, people should definitely listen to his interviews to see how his power supplies are operating.
Yeah, right now I can only get the sound to bounce to the TV behind me. It's not running through my actual PA here to bounce to you guys. But one of the what he's explaining right now is that as this needle moves, it's moving consistently, but the ink is only drawn partially as deep as the needle actually penetrates. And you can see it, and you can see like the elasticity in the skin. But the thing that's really important to take note of is look at how little that mark is. Like, look how short it is. And mm-hmm. as the needle continues to move, that opening that has been made will actually draw more ink into it as the needle is continuing to move forward. You can actually watch each one of these marks grow like 4 or 5 strokes after the initial penetration has been made. And I this really blew my mind when this was initially introduced to me, because it hadn't occurred to me that like not only is the needle depositing those ink particles, but that vacuum that is created in all of the subsequent holes that's actually pulling more ink material into each little hole. But I think this, like I said, it kind of changed my understanding to how saturation works and why it's so important to be like slow and thorough and move your machine in slow, tight motions, so that when you're in those tight motions, all of these previous punctures are pulling more pigment into them, and therefore that means fewer passes with the needle. You're actually letting the physics of tattooing work with you instead of against you. So as we were talking about like different stroke length last week and how much ink is deposited, I think it's really important to understand that there's a whole nother thing that's going on as we're saturating. You've got the needle pushing the ink in, and then as you're moving, that little tiny puddle of ink that sits there right along with the needle, like that bead of ink that moves along with you as you shade or as you line, that bead of ink is continuing to deposit ink behind the needle because of the suction formed by every hole. So a nerdy little thing that if it wasn't for Aaron, I don't think I would be aware of how specifically that function of tattooing works, but I just wanted to share it with you guys and see if maybe you wanted to nerd out as much as I do about it.
Obviously the tattooers in the audience have to, or in the comments, get to post up their thoughts. You know, one of the, you know, what I was getting out of those interviews, and again, as a computery kind of a guy, one of the, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things that he was tackling was running, it seems like the power supply is sending out the power in a manner. I'm not going to try to use a few technical terms to stay accurate, but it's variable so that the amount of points in the skin, right, like the rotations per second, or mm-hmm. the holes per second, are going to stay the same whether when it's in the skin or out of the skin, but not necessarily in the same way that regardless of the rotary system, it's the power that fluctuates.
One of the things that I took away from the way that he explains it is he is, instead of being concerned with how many volts a machine is running at, it's just kind of like a number that we use. That's different for like a machine is going to work differently at 7 volts. Like a Bishop machine might run at a different speed at 7 volts than a Cheyenne machine, for instance. Like, you know, even though the voltage going into the machine is the same, it doesn't necessarily mean that motor speed is the same.
Right.
Which means that penetration speed could be different, which also means that the strength could be different, even though they're both at 7 volts. Right. So one of the things Aaron gets really...
What do you run your machine at is almost, yeah. It depends on what machine you're doing.
Yeah, it's a number that, like, for each of us that are familiar with our machine, like, I might be like, oh, yeah, I'm running at 5.3 or 6.2 right now. But what does that really mean? Because the person that asked probably isn't using the same machine that I am. They're not using the same setup as I am. Are they working color or black and gray? Because that makes a difference in how it works and the function and all the things. But one of the things that I think is really cool about the way that Aaron breaks it down and explains it is he starts talking about hertz. And when you're talking about hertz rather than volts, we're actually talking about the wavelength of energy that's coming out of these machines.
Yeah.
And those wavelengths if we're talking the wavelength of energy, we can also compare that to the wavelength that the needle is traveling in, if that makes sense. So his power supplies are designed to, you know, if you're tattooing like crazy and you're in an area of the skin where like it's tougher, like the back, where there's a lot of skin that like pushes back with a lot of strength. So your machine has to be a little bit punchier or it runs slower. And it gets the motor in the machine will get hotter. If you're working with a power supply, those are the sessions that you're more likely to fry the power supply because you've got the resistance of the skin pushing back. So the cool thing about his machine or his power supplies is whether you're working in delicate skin that has no resistance or whether you're working in the tougher skin that has more fascia and more like muscle behind it that the needles have to work harder to get in there, your machine's going to run consistently with his power supplies. But it's all because he's nerded out to this degree to get like the high-end cameras that can shoot super slow motion and super micro, and he's really starting to understand like the physics of how and why the electrical current can affect how the ink is actually delivered. Like there's many mechanical processes in between those two steps. But I love that he's broken it down into wavelengths because, you know, energy travels in wavelengths. It's traveling from the power supply, be it, you know, DC or a battery, whatever power supply you're running with, but it takes that power supply and it makes it consistent. And when that power supply is consistent, that's one less variable that you have to worry about while you're working. You just know the hit is going to be consistent every time. You know that the ink is going to be delivered consistently every time, whether it's tough, meaty, fascia-y skin or soft, delicate, like collarbone skin. Like it's all going to be delivered very consistently. So I think that's why it's really important to understand the differences between the cams that we're working with and like how far that needle is traveling to deliver the amount of ink, but also like if you start understanding the energy and the wavelengths that go into it, you can start really understanding like, yes, I'm traumatizing the skin and that's a given, but you can start understanding how to do it very efficiently and cause minimal trauma and get things accomplished in the minimal amount of time and the minimal amount of passes because you're actually working like efficiently with each stroke and each tool is doing what it's intended to do. So like these things are not intended to be gimmicks to get you to go out and like buy different things, but I want you to understand why to buy something new or why not to buy something new or why like maybe you've been like struggling with saturation your whole career. You can't get it as smooth as you would like. And you realize you've just been running your machine too fast or your power supply is inconsistent or your machine is at the wrong stroke. Like those are all things where like it would be hard to narrow it down to which thing is the problem that's slowing you down. And it could be all of them. But if you start understanding these physics, these microscopic physics and these micro mechanics, it then makes you a more efficient, consistent tattooer. And once you are efficient with your process and you're consistent with your heels, you have so much freedom to just play because then you're playing with the artistic side of tattooing. When you've got the science down, the physics down, the mechanics down, now you have the freedom to play and understand that those playtime tattoos are going to heal into beautiful works of art and they're going to heal nicely. And like it just makes, when you understand these things, it makes tattooing so much more fun. You're not fighting it, you're just doing it.
Is there some advice or like, so what if, let's present the case of one of the listeners who's a tattooer who's not necessarily around any, you know, wicked knowledgeable, you know, tattooers about machines, right? Or, you know, so they're actively tattooing a couple of years or whatever, you know, doing a fine job. But, you know, obviously we were just talking about some resources like Aaron, you know, online, but what other ways could you advise somebody or what other avenues are there for people to learn about, you know, how to shift, you know, potentially their machines or their needles or even why?
So this might sound silly and it also might be like I'm selling or pushing us, but like I am always open to answer questions. And if you ask me some question that's off the wall and it is over my head, or I just don't have the answer based on the style of tattooing that you're doing, I can always point you to somebody that would give you the helpful advice. I'm the kind of person that like, if you care enough to want to make it better, I will always take my time to answer your questions to the best of my ability. So like, I mean, not for nothing, I'm always down to be helpful. Like if you want to hit me up on Instagram or any of the other social medias or anything, it might take me a few days to get back to you, but I always do, because it's so important to me that like anybody that's tattooing and you're passionate enough about it to want to be good or want to be better or want to keep improving. I feel like it's like my moral obligation to help you in that journey. Like if you're seeking it out, I want to help you find it. So if it's like a super specific question, I feel like me and Gabe are probably awesome resources, because like through this network and through all the other networks that we know so many knowledgeable people. But other than that, like just seek out the nerds, seek out like people that have been tattooing for years and years. Like every time I have a conversation with Dana Brunson, even though he's, you know, a totally different generation and the things that like the values that are important to him are a little bit different than, you know, what's important to me as I've come up, but like he can answer all kinds of technical questions and he can talk about how the technology has changed and evolved. And when you start hearing about the evolution of technology, it kind of helps you understand where we are now and how lucky we are to have the precision tools that we have now. And how those precision tools then make our lives a lot easier. And like I said, it takes it from like struggling to get the image into the skin to like, oh no, now we're just playing. Like we're pushing this as far as we can push it because I understand what's going on. I feel like that'd probably be like the quickest and easiest way to get a question answered is just jump into one of our inboxes. But
sure. And then
what do you think?
Getting tattooed. Right. So part of, you know, a lot of tattooers' journeys, we'll just, you know, if you're looking to, you know, achieve an effect or a spirit of a tattoo, you know, tattooer, right, then getting tattooed by him, right? Especially, you know, if you save your forearms, you know, you get to watch, you know, or your legs or whatever, right? You know, but, you know, I'm sure that you were learning from your back, too. I don't know if you had, like, mirrors set up or whatever.
We didn't really have mirrors set up, but so it's actually kind of cool. While Russ was working on my back, Chris, who at the time worked for Cheyenne, he was traveling back and forth to Ink and Dagger all the time. So Russ, when he was doing my back, I got to hear Chris explain all the differences and how the different Cheyenne machines work, like what the different features and stuff were. So my whole back, I believe the whole project was done with a prototype Soul Nova Unlimited.
Oh, awesome.
And then it was also the prototype craft needles that he was using at the time. So it was like a prototype machine and prototype needles. So even though I couldn't have what he was doing, I could feel it. I could feel the pressure he was using. I could feel how he was manipulating my skin. I could feel how he was working with my body to achieve what he needed to achieve. I learned a lot from that. But because of the time that I was getting tattooed, in like the timeline of tattoo technology, I was very blessed to be able to have like such a different kind of back piece achieved, but also with brand new technology that like, you know, very few people in the world had been tattooed with those needles and with those machines at that time. So, you know, as Chris was asking for feedback from Russ, like being a tattooer myself, I could also give intelligent feedback to like what it felt like and how that hit felt in this area versus this area. Or if, you know, he took it from like the steady solid mode to the soft feathery mode, I could describe like as the person receiving the tattoo, I could describe the difference in those feelings. So it was a learning process for all of us. But it was a little different when Tofi came and worked on me, because Tofi's like a madman. So I got to see like Russ sweat a bit, because, you know, he works so differently than Tofi. He's very tight and controlled, and Tofi's just all over and like saturated, get it in there, like the needle marks make it more interesting, you know, like all those things. So it is crazy and wonderful how much you can learn from getting worked on. There's actually this new idea I have, and I'm still kind of like cooking up and polishing the idea. I'll go ahead, since we're on the topic, I'll go ahead and share it today. But in the near future, I'll have some like videos and stuff. But what I would like to start doing is kind of like marketing myself to tattooers who would like to learn like a specific skill or a specific style, or, you know, if you have a specific question, I'd like to sit down and like first have a conversation with you about what you would like to learn. Like what are the things that you want to get better at over the next, let's say, 2 years. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then from there, we'll build a tattoo for you. So like we'll build, like we'll have an additional consultation to build a tattoo idea where I can teach you all of these things that you want to learn. So I feel like it would be a really cool, like 1 to 2 day deal where, or larger projects I would be welcome to, but where I could record the whole tattoo process. And then as I'm working, I'll talk about like what needle I'm using, what machine I'm using, what ink I'm using, what drawing techniques I'm using, what saturation techniques I'm using, what this is going to do for the heel, you know what I mean? So it'll be very, instead of like a seminar, it would be like a very one-off educational experience where you can ask me any question. And the whole point of this tattoo is for me to teach you anything you want to learn through this tattoo. So, I mean, the majority of my work, if you go to my Instagram now, is all like super bright, colorful landscapes or surreal or like crazy space stuff. But in reality, when I started tattooing, I wanted to be like, you know, like Bob Tyrell, you know, I wanted to be like Tom Renshaw. I grew up in Michigan. So those were the two names that I was most familiar with and followed all the time. So I guess what I'm getting at is I feel like I'm confidently well-versed in everything from black work, fine line work, black and gray work, black and gray realism, surrealism, like all of these different specific styles that I have concentrated in for periods of time. Like I've learned a lot of tricks from a lot of different artists and I want to just start passing them on. So that's kind of the new idea I'm working on, is instead of just selling tattoos or selling tattoo sessions, I want to start specifically marketing a portion of my time to other tattooers to help make you better. Like instead of saying I'm going to do a seminar and teach 20 people at once, I'd rather do 1 weekend or 1 2-day thing. And we go mm-hmm. through the whole process of like how we build our consultations, like how do we even talk to our client to get these ideas and stories out of them? And then from there, how do we mock up that idea? And then from that mock-up, how do we take that mock-up to a tattoo and all the different ways we could do that?
And you're role modeling that with them.
Basically, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. We go awesome. Through the whole process of all of it. But I just feel like it'll be a different way to just share huge amounts of knowledge with people. And then the idea of recording it, then whoever I work on has the entire day broken down in like 1 or 2 hour segments. So like, because it's so much knowledge, I know you're not going to absorb it all as I'm speaking and as you're in pain and as you're in agony, but you can go back and rewatch it over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and then you can see how it healed, right? You look at the video and then look at your arm or your leg.
Yep. And then on top of that, I think that will springboard like a Patreon or some other kind of subscription, so that if anybody else wants to be a part of these lessons or learn from these tailored lessons for another artist, they could be available. So it's an idea that's still like ripening.
The tattooed club. So, you know, if you're one of the artists that got tattooed and that did this, then you can, you know, you get to watch the replays or the live streams or the other ones maybe. Or, well, you know, you've already been working on it. Yep. That's awesome. That's a great idea.
Yep. So that's the idea that I've been ripening up. And you guys remember Lauren, I think she's going to start helping me broadcast and stream those specific ideas.
Awesome.
Her buddy Adam offered to kind of help with editing when I need it, because I am very slow and very horrible at video editing. So all the pieces are falling into place for this to be a really cool program. And then I'm hoping that once I start doing this, I could get some more artists on board. So like, it's not just about me or my ego, but I just think this is a really cool way to dump a ton of knowledge on another artist and give them a cool piece to take home with them for the rest of their life. And they can, like you said, they can watch how it heals. They can see how these tricks change in the skin over time. And like, they can see what lasts, what doesn't last, like all of those things. I mean, I could, I think I could even, like, if somebody just wanted to hit me up, like, hey, I've got this tattoo I don't like, make it better. I think I could make a 4-hour lesson out of that for anybody as well. So, like, I don't think cover-ups would be out of the question at all. Cause, like, if you can do a good cover-up, you can do an even better tattoo that isn't a cover-up. So I'm always down to help with cover-up ideas and things like that. But yeah, so that's the idea I'm cooking on to, like, just pass knowledge forward, but we'll see how that evolves over the next couple of months.
Well, I imagine if you make a little video clip that sounds like that and have, you know, Adam, you know, edit it up a little bit, you know, a 30-second, 60-second, you know, boom, 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 you know.
Yep.
And then you want to wire to a calendar that people could just pick off and, you know, pay the premium. And
yep.
That's awesome. So let me
do it's one. It's still just cooking, but. But that's what we'll be doing soon.
Oh yeah. Let's see here. So I'm so what I got from Whitney was her phone was had left the building. She's traveling, and I sent her the link via the email. So I would propose maybe we get on to the topic, and then hopefully she'll beam in before then. And I've got 12% power, so I could chat for 12%.
Usually it's me that's got the faulty equipment because I'm on the road.
Curiosity, do you hear the guy next door's lawnmower?
Nope.
You know, I knew not to say anything. It was the same thing that I did earlier. I'm like, I know you don't have to say anything about computer problems. The computer does an amazing job of filtering out the lawnmower next door. Anytime anybody on any of the recordings has ever okay, sorry, let's So
when I was in go ahead.
Sorry.
So when I was in Detroit, I got roped into helping with some of the APT projects that were going on, and we took some recordings and things like that. And it's the first time I had met Ben Shaw in person. So we're sitting there and we're talking, and he's like, there was a in the booth immediately right next to him was somebody working with a coil machine all weekend, like nonstop coil machine, and it was fine, no problem. But Ben's like, I don't know how we're going to get good sound with this. It's going to be like, you know, he'd done some tests on his cell phone, and his cell phone was picking up the machine. And I was like, oh no, it's not going to be a problem at all. He's like, what do you like, are we just going to edit it out? I was like, no, like, these are stage mics, they only pick up an 18-inch bubble. Like, anything outside of that bubble, unless it's incredibly loud, it's not going to pick it up. So our sound was wonderful all weekend. Awesome. And it was the thing that I think Ben was worried about the most, was how are we going to get good crisp sound when we're talking to like Tramp about the history of the Detroit show and tattooing and It kind of goes back to like, what are you going to be using the equipment for? And then find the thing to fit your needs. So are we singing? Am I playing out? Am I a band? No, but that's the perfect mic for what we need if we're going to be working in loud convention floors and recording sound in loud, busy, congested areas. And the sound is always wonderful, but it's a matter of just finding the right tool for the job. You know?
Sure. And if you're just really using the last tool that the guy, you know, the person before you was using, you know, for whatever reason, isn't necessarily the best, you know. But again, trying to, you know, get out and explore and find it's also not trivial. There's a lot, you know, a bunch of different types of machines. And, you know, presumably you're adjusting your hand, you know, motions and techniques to some of those machines because they have a, you know, fixed behaviors. And but that's nuts. But, well, speaking of machines and different types of machines, you know, the topic that we teased out was the new trend, the new, I don't know, is it a sea change? Is it going to stick around? There's folks who have been getting put under anesthesia, you know, full on, and then getting, you know, large amounts of work done by, you know, four or five artists. And it was funny because I've been, you know, watching a lot of the new, you know, just a lot of the stuff that's changing really quick and trying to figure out some of the opinions and watching opinions. And so you were like, I got opinions about that. So I'm interested. And I might play devil's advocate just a little bit. Maybe not, though. We'll see.
Here's my opinion about it.
Let's hear it. Yeah.
As a collector myself, I have experimented with different prenums and things that have different numbing agents in them. Lidocaine usually is typically the safest, but there's other canes that can be in there. Mm-hmm. But one time, back to like the story of my back piece, one time I wasn't sure where Russ was working and I was on my way down to Georgia. I had my appointment that morning and I was like maybe an hour and a half away from his shop. So I stopped at a rest stop and I like saturated my whole area with the prenum. Like that was too much. Like maybe half a back or a quarter of a back at a time, but doing my whole back was too much. And did I have any adverse effects? Not really, but for the entire day, like I could feel how fluttery my heart was. Like the whole day, okay. I just felt like I had stood up too fast. Like I was just slightly like, I don't want to say wobbly, but you know what it is when you go from like kneeling, like let's say you tie your shoe and then you pop up real quick and you're mm-hmm. just like, whoa. It was like that all day, plus like the flutter of my heart. So did I have any like major palpitations? Did I have anything scary? Did I have anything like that? No, but it was enough to know that my body was affected and it was enough to know that there is a limit. So that being said, I am an advocate of using certain prenums. I'm an advocate of using them appropriately. I'm an advocate of using them in small areas at once and then moving on to another area and another area, not a whole limb anymore, just because I learned the hard way.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about people being put under anesthesia, I just want to rewind and talk about any medical procedure that you have done, like any medical procedure, whether it's dental, whether it's a surgery, whether it's any kind of treatment that you need to be put under or any kind of surgery that you need to be put under. Gabe, what is the most dangerous part of that procedure?
Well, the dangerous part. I don't know the most
anesthesia.
Hopefully waking up. Right.
Yeah. The anesthesia itself is the most dangerous part of any procedure. I mean, okay, this might be a little weird to bring up, but look at Kanye West's mom. She went in for a breast reduction and she did not wake up from the anesthesia. So we're not even talking about tattooing yet. We're talking about the medical industry where you've got just all the money in the world and the best of the best, and she still didn't wake up. Yep. Do you hear where I'm going with this?
Yeah, sure. Michael Jackson.
So my fear is that this trend is going to continue until somebody dies. And I don't want to see anybody die from getting tattooed. Like, it's such a superficial pain. It is painful. It does take a lot out of you. But like, not to be one of those people that's like, oh, you got to earn it. But like, there's a whole nother layer to being a tattoo collector. And that whole other layer is kind of what unites us into a tribe. We've all gone through this initiation that we didn't even necessarily realize we were going through. You know what I mean? Like we've all sat there like pieces of meat. We all had to sit there and let somebody work on us, even though we wanted to get up off that table and walk out of the room. Most of us that have large work, we've all sat longer than our body wanted to tolerate, and we still did it, and we still lived, and we were still okay the next day. You know what I mean? You just walk away feeling sunburnt. My fear is that people are in such a hurry to get something that's going to last the rest of their lives, and they're so afraid of the pain that they're literally putting their lives in danger. And that just doesn't seem like a equitable risk to me.
Well, but therein lies like the, you know, but you can't really stop people from being, you know, dumb, right? There's the Darwin Awards every year for a reason, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, no, I get you.
I'm just afraid somebody's not going to wake up,
you know,
and it's going to be bad,
you know. And I guess it's probably the same thing with plastic surgery, right? Or some of the plastic surgeries. Yeah, it's pretty heavy, you know, to your point, you know, that there's heavy insurances because to your point, and there's probably, I'm sure there's other risks too with anesthesia. Mm-hmm. If it's only 1 in 10,000 or 1 in 100,000, you know, to your point, you know, 100,000 people do it and then there's a death, you know. You know, I used to kind of haphazardly joke, you know, cause I run events and it would be like, you know, we haven't really run a popular event until it's been so big, you know, that you know, someone dies at. And then I sick humor, you know, or whatever. But then I almost watched somebody check out at an event, and I was like, I don't want that ever. You know, that's not you know, there's no, it's definitely not. If you can help stop somebody from being you know, entered into the Darwin Awards, you know, in our neck of the woods, we should try to stop that for sure. But people have the right, right? So like if and you know, it's like people with a load of dough. you know, kind of have the right mm-hmm. to spend a load of dough to, I mean, to risk their lives, I guess, to, you know, they don't get the same experience.
It goes back to the ethics, though.
Like, it's not the same experience. You know, there's no question that, like, mm-hmm. you know, you get put out, you wake up with a back piece, you have, you know, almost no interaction with the tattooers. You lost, you know, and again, I think this might go back to the, you know, the tattooist fashion statement, you know, now is bigger, right? Like, so the tattooist fashion statement, you know, the easy way to get a fashionable tattoo, you know, was not to get a full back piece because there was no easy way to do it. Now, you know, there's an easy way to do it. So it's, you know, so maybe in my mind, it's like just a really, you know, it's an extension of, you know, fashion tattoos, which, you know, I can't really criticize too much, although
this part's good. While you're calling them fashion tattoos, this part of my opinion is going to probably crack you up a little bit, but like anytime I see one of these situations where it's like, oh, you just got put out and you had five artists work on you and you got your teeth done at the same time, huh, let's zoom in close and look at all of these tattoos that were rushed and done in 8 hours, and then you look and they're just rushed, like, oh cool, yeah. you risked your life for mediocre work, cool sure. rapper, cool actor, cool. You could have done anything you could have afforded. Like, for the $100,000 that you paid for that anesthesiologist over there, you could have actually like gone to the best in the world who probably would have babied you equally as much, and you could have gotten quality work and all the things. And the time it takes to coordinate that, like, yeah, it's one day, but that took 6 months to coordinate an artist's and an anesthesiologist's life. Like, I don't know. It just
it's silly, a different culture. Right. Like the, you know, so for me, part of what I, you know, part of what I would love to see in some ways, or at least part of the tattoo world, you know, it's coming clearly, you know, at least these days, you know, from, you know, a service industry work for hire. Right. But like, I'm all for like shitting in the middle of a room and, you know, charging $500,000 and calling it art or whatever. Right. If that artist could get away with it, you know, that's way better than, you know, that money going towards bombs or whatever, right? So, you know, when and if there's ways for tattooers to kind of transcend, you know, client walks in, do tattoo on them, walk out, which I love, that's amazing, and that's the heart of tattooing. But like, if there's people who are like, I'm gonna, you know, only do one tattoo next year, it's $100,000, you know, because I'm an artist, and that's, you know, some artists, you know, they don't charge on the time, they're charging on the intrinsic artistic value. So I don't know. So I guess part of me is like, I there is a place for $100,000, you know, tattoo. You know, I don't, to your point, I don't think it's, you know, the bulk of it going towards, you know, the medical insurance and you know, anesthesiologists, you know, to get it done in a day while you're sleeping. But part of me is just like, if somebody wants to sell themselves short of the experience, you know, it's their right to sell themselves short. And again, maybe it's even the main point, you know, and usually by the time that you get, you know, two or three or four fashion-y tattoos, maybe you start, you know, that it's hard to jump right into like the large shamanic experiences of the tattoo and how it can make you a better person for the rest of your life until you mm-hmm. get a couple little bangers because you're interested in testing the waters, you know, it feels like, or at least that's my experience. I tested the waters on like all my body parts. So I had to test the water everywhere before I was like, wait, why don't you just go big or go home, like they told you mm-hmm. the first time.
I don't know. I definitely feel like, do people have the right to go under anesthesia? Absolutely. Like, I'm not going to say nobody has the right to do that. I understand that, like, it's a licensed anesthesiologist in the room. They've gone through years and years of school. They're monitoring your heart rate closely. They're doing all the things. Like, I understand that. It's still scary. It's still a scary thing to put that much trauma on your body and your heart.
That's also
for the sake of a tattoo.
Yeah, that's not not insignificant to think about or talk about, right? Like, if you're going five artists on your back, you know, mm-hmm. one of the reasons why the body passes out from pain is because it's like, hey, that's probably about where the limit should be, right?
Yeah, shock has a purpose. Like, when you go into shock, that it's your body's met its limit, past its limit.
Yeah. And you've talked about that, right? Like, if you're doing multiple days in a row, you're, you know, not often, but sometimes you're teetering on that brink of shock. You know, I'm sure that, you know, in the last 25 years, it was at least once, or probably just once, I could kind of remember where I'm like, I don't know, this might be what shock feels like. Like, you know,
I encountered it with my client yesterday. She's a client. Her name's Bobby Joe. I've been working on her for probably over 10 years. We've got a lot of time together, and we've had multiple hour sessions. But yesterday we were working on like the back of the knee and like the inner thigh area. And, you know, it, I mean, we started it. We got here at 1, probably started tattooing by 1:30, and it was like 9 o'clock, and she's kind of like shaky. Like every time I touch her, she's shaking. And I've been working on her long enough that I'm familiar with her body. I'm familiar with how her body is going to communicate while I'm working. And I was like, I'm just going to commit this last little area, and we're going to wrap it up for the night, because I don't want to push you all the way into shock. And we're starting to get some shock symptoms. And she was like, okay, cool. And she's never one to tap out. She will, like, if I would have said, let's keep going, she would have laid there and we would have kept going. But her body was telling me, not her mouth. She was willing to keep going, but her body was telling me that we were there. So that's where, like, ethically, I can't, even though my back can handle it, even though my client wants to keep going, it's like, I'm going to see you again in 3 weeks. Like, we'll just pick up either in another spot or right here. It's no problem. But that's one of those, like, ethically, you know, I charge by the day. I'm not charging by the hour anyways. So like once we've agreed upon a price for the day, we just kind of work towards a goal, or I work until my client hates my life. But yesterday we got to the point where her body was saying, no, this is enough. I'm done. And I have to ethically listen to that. I can't keep pushing further. Like sometimes we'll get to a point where we get a little bit of those symptoms and we can like have a meal. We can do like sugary candy, carbo load, those kind of things, fruit, orange juice, bring somebody's blood sugar up, give them a little bit more energy, and we can get another hour. But we had already done that. We had already had our dinner break, and we had already like exhausted our round two already. So, I feel like if you're doing that and somebody's out and their body can't communicate back to you, you don't have that boundary of when this is enough trauma versus like, all right, this is going to really compromise the body. And when you compromise the body too much, you've got like infections to worry about. You've got like the lymph nodes can only take so much as they're like working to filter out like not only the ink and stuff that we're putting into the skin, but now you've got the anesthesia that the lymphatic system has to filter out too. So the lymphatic system is working twice as hard as a regular tattoo when somebody's put under. And then you've got the fact that when the body comes back, it's not only recovering from the anesthesia, it's not only recovering from the actual trauma that's happened, but now you've got all of these open wounds and your body needs to rush all the white blood cells to it. And it needs to start making more white blood cells to continue healing it, but you've already exhausted it.
You know,
so what should take 3 or 4 days is going to take longer.
It's only $2,000 to get an IV of a vitamin push. Do that once a day.
Yeah, but that's not going to help your lymph nodes filter all the toxins and medicine out of your blood any quicker. And then what's your liver going through after throwing all of that? Those, I mean, because we talk about like we talk about lidocaine, we talk about anesthesia, but there's all of these other carriers and stuff that have to carry that medicine into the body. And, you know, I'm sure there's probably like antibiotics taken either before or after. And like, yes, antibiotics are helpful, but it's all things that your lymphatic system needs to filter. And I don't know. They call it tattoo flu, where when you've been tattooed for a couple of days where your body is just ill and depleted. Yeah. And I feel like when you overdo it with anesthesia, you're going to stretch out that tattoo flu. Like, even if you are taking painkillers, and I think the people that would sign up for anesthesia are probably taking high-end powerful painkillers afterwards. So that's more poisons that you're putting into your body that your liver then has to filter out and your lymphatic system has to filter out. And it just seems like to save a little bit of pain, you're sacrificing an awful lot and you're really putting your body through more than it's worth. Like, deal with that superficial pain, get through it, and the next day it's fine and your body can recover because your body knows what happened to it.
And then repeat every 4 weeks or every 4 to 6 weeks for a year, right? Like, I mean, the reason why, one of the reasons why they're you know, they're often doing this. The motivating factor, it feels like, is so that, you know, they could get it all done real quick, right? But
see, I disagree with that, Gabe, because look at how many shows that we've been to where you see somebody laid out and they've got four people working on them and they're conscious the whole time. They're just sitting there grinning and bearing it.
Yeah,
like, if you want to get it, if the point of this is getting it done all at once, then be a man and get it done all at once. But, like, be a man about it. Like, girls too, be a man about it. Like, there's no crying in baseball. If you want to play the game, you got to go through, you got to get the bumps and bruises. You know, there's no crying, and there is crying in tattoos. I've cried getting tattooed.
Yeah.
You've cried getting tattooed, I'm sure.
Oh, but, you, like, know, one of the lessons,
got to go through it.
Like, is it, you know, one of the fundamental lessons that tattooing has taught me is that it takes a long period of discomfort to get to the pretty thing. And, you know, sometimes, like, you know, when you're going for like a bodysuit, it's a fucking lifetime of discomfort to get to a pretty thing that you hope to complete before you fucking check out. Right. And, you know, to take that away, you know, and again, for me, absolutely. Like that would defeat the whole purpose. Like, if I could just go under and have my bodysuit finished by my favorite artist, you know, because I'm a millionaire and I could afford to, you know, afford it. You know, that takes away from all of the travel, all the experience. And actually, you know, kind of to your point, you know, most of the tattooers that are working, I mean, these days, like, part of the benefit or part of the, not the, or the attraction, like, it's the experience with the actual tattooers, right? They're cool people, you know, they have great thoughts, and it's a pleasure. It's more than a pleasure. It's a, you know, it's amazing to be around them. And so, like, to go and check out, you know, while they're working on you, like, you know, like I said, for me, it's like, I don't know. I can't really have too much of an opinion. If somebody wants to spend a lot of money to check out while tattooers have no connection to them, to your point, there's a health effect, right? You know, I'm not libertarian, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, I could hear that voice in me being like, someone's going to be dumb. Fucking let them be dumb. Let them spend a lot of money. You know, I don't know if, like, I've already seen or heard, you know, there's anesthesiologists, not to extend it, but, like, you know, anesthesiologists will be like, wait, in LA, they're charging $100,000 for that shit. You know, I'm only $5,000 a day. I'm only $10,000 a day. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, there's, you know, 100 more anesthesiologists that are like, I'll put people under for fucking, you know, I'm not in LA, you know, I'm in Cleveland or wherever the fuck. Right. And, yeah, I know. So, I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. And it's definitely not, like, you know, there are serious consequences. And I'm sure that we both know people through the course of the last, you know, couple of decades who will take, not necessarily tattooing, but other body modifications, you know, that are more prone to being, you know, when you're splitting stuff in half or cutting shit off or whatever, you're, you know, there's people that have passed on because they're not, because of the seriousness, you know, of how we're doing these, you know, of what's happening, and kind of, you know, even if it's just 1 in 100,000, right? Again, part of it's like, or 1 in 75 or whatever it is, or 100, you know, eventually there's, you know, 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 people, you know, 1 million people. And now all of a sudden we have, you know, some issues, you know, and the real people.
It just doesn't seem like an equitable risk to me, but, I mean, do people have a right to do it? Absolutely. Go gung ho, but it's just like with any other elective procedure. Do you have a right to modify your body? Do you have a right to do these things? Absolutely. I understand that, like, all the waivers are in place, the consent forms, the liability, like, all of that I understand is in place. I know that these things are being done because it's so publicly done. They're being done legally and safely and all the things. I'm not knocking the process at all. It's just,
me, legal doesn't
an elective
safe,
risk.
Right?
Correct.
You know, so who knows, like, just because somebody's got a license, again, somebody, the doctor gave Michael Jack, like, how much more money could you possibly have? And how much more incentive could that doctor have to keep people alive, right? And to your point, you know, if the millionaires and trillionaires and gazillionaires can lose out to this kind of stuff. I think it was, I don't know. I don't want to. Anyways, so we are on an hour. Next week we have Marvin Moskowitz is our guest. You know, one of the other new topics that we could chat about. And I don't know if Marvin would be the perfect guy to bring in on it, or maybe we save it for the next one. But there is the robots that are tattooing on people. And then I don't know if you caught it, but the one in Texas did a collaboration with a live tattooer, with Dylan Forte. Mm-hmm. And so I think it would be fun to, let's you know, catch everybody up on kind of what the robots are doing, talk to you about a little bit, and then maybe we'll invite the robot guys on sometime to chat.
Yeah, I'm down to talk about the robot tattooing, because you know, we all have opinions, we all have ideas of what should and shouldn't be done, but I feel like there's a side of tattooing that is filled with fine artists and people that are pushing the limits and pushing the boundaries of what's capable with a tattoo. And then there are people that are seeking out basically folk art still. There are people that still collect old, like deliberately traditional flash pieces. There are people that are drawing new traditional flash pieces. So I feel like having like a high tech version of that, where it's just like a robot folk art, I don't see a problem in like getting small trinket tattoos that were done by a robot. Like even that might be a cool story to tell for people, but like, I don't see the day where like nice back pieces will be done with robots and things like that. Like there's just too many things about like stretching the body that you can't program that into a machine. But for small trinket tattoos where like the machine could stretch the skin and tattoo clearly, if that's the way you want to get tattooed, I feel like there's definitely going to be a market for it, and might collect just that.
That was crazy. I just had like a visceral memory of, it must have been a dream, it couldn't have been too long ago, but it was of being tattooed in a spot where it was obvious that it was like, the robots can't do this. And I'm pretty gung-ho. I'm pretty, you know, I can't imagine a surgical robot not being capable of it, you know, while injecting the most perfect amount of lidocaine in, because the other needle is the sensor that it's testing out, you know, as it's going in. Again, it might not be cost effective, but there's always some quadrillionaire who's like, I want a bodysuit tomorrow. So fucking, you know, I want one robot to tattoo me and the next one to go through and spray the healing wrap on me and fucking, you know, throw me in the healing tank like Luke Skywalker and Empire Strikes Back. But that'll be for...
Healing tank for tattoos, if there's a nerd out there that wants to come up with an overnight healing tank for tattoos, sign me up.
Okay, but then you'll be okay. So you just have to stay awake for the tattoo.
Yeah, I think so. You got to be present for part of it.
Well, and again, like I said, for me, the you know, if your tattooer, there's all sorts of people too, right? Like you could just be a regular plain old tattooer or an awesome tattooer that doesn't want to have. I don't know. There's all sorts of tattooers and all sorts of clients, and you know, that is kind of the wonderful part. And again, I don't even mean to. If it sounded like I was disparaging fashion tattoos, you know, there's awesome snooty fashion tattoos that are world class, and then there's, you know, crappy fashion tattoos, just like there's, you know, all sorts of great snooty this and crappy that. Anyways, let's hope that Whitney's in a spot in her travels so she could tune in. But it was a fun conversation, and I do think that I have the naming convention down, so this should be going out to all the podcast stations again, and we'll catch up again in the near future. When's your next? You said Hell City is your next travel. Oh shit! What are the dates on Hell City?
17th through 19th
of
May.
May 17th through 19th. Perfect. Next month, because this is coming April now. Okay.
Yep.
I'm gonna go prepare.
All right. Go buy yourself a new computer, Gabe.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Yeah, I'll send you that picture. Awesome. Well, have fun. We'll catch up soon.
All right. See you guys next week.